On February 15th and 16th, the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra will continue its Moxley Carmichael Masterwork Series in performances of Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, music from Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty, and the Rhapsody on a Theme by Paganini of Sergei Rachmaninoff. The Rachmaninoff will feature guest pianist Tanya Gabrielian, who's joined me. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
I tell you, welcome to Knoxville, but really it's welcome back to Knoxville, right?
Yeah, I played a piano recital here a couple years ago.
Yeah, for the Evelyn Miller Young Piano Series.
Yes, I couldn't remember the name because it's too early in the morning for me still. But that's the one. Yes, don't ask me to repeat the name.
Well, what is it like playing on a series like that away from home? Is there a different set of pressures or anticipations?
I normally play away from home. I mean, you can only play in a city so many times before people get really sick of you. So, I mean, most of my shows are on the road. So, yeah, it was great to come here. I met some wonderful people, and I still have friends here that I'm excited to see.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you have such an interesting backstory. Would you mind telling our listeners about your studies of Xuan Shu Quan and how that led to your music career?
Yeah, probably in a parallel universe, I'm a martial arts person. I love watching UFC and all that kind of
really?
Stuff. So I used to fight, and I was training in northern style of kung fu mm-hmm. when I was in London. But this is not very compatible with being a pianist, as I discovered the hard way. I was sparring with someone. I kicked somebody. It wasn't because he was mean. I just kicked him because I was supposed to. And my legs slipped because I was on a sort of a hard floor, and it was a puddle of sweat. And I fell face forward down, and I put my hands back to protect them so I could still play. So the only thing that happened was my face broke, and I had spinal cord damage instead. So I was in hospital for a month. I had two operations, but my hands were totally fine.
Yeah. And that's what I find most significant about that story, because I understand you weren't focusing on music at that point in your life, but it was just sort of a reaction to make sure that your hands were protected.
Well, I mean, I was. I was already in music school.
Okay.
And I didn't necessarily see, martial arts as my future.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I made the decision that I did.
Okay.
But it was really fun, and I miss it.
Yeah, yeah. Do martial arts play a role in your piano playing at all?
I think the sort of the mental fitness of it does, definitely. I think sports and music have a lot in common. There's mm-hmm. there's a book called The Inner Game of Tennis, which is really useful for musicians. I think there's a music version of it, but the tennis version is even better. And watching the Olympics going on now, I mean, there's so much similarity in terms of, you know, we've been training since we were, you know, basically fetuses at what we do, and the hours and the dedication and the sacrifice that goes through it. You know, you can definitely see the parallels there, and sort of the performance aspect of it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I want to go back a little further. So after you graduated from high school, you studied biomedical engineering at Harvard, I understand.
No. So I was going to, and I took a year off because I was kind of burnt out.
I see.
So, So I didn't originally intend to become a musician. It was just sort of my way of slacking off initially. I didn't know anything about it, and I remember I asked my teacher once, like, how does anybody make a living at music? And he laughed at me. And should I have seen that as a foreshadowing of what was to come, maybe I would have made different choices. But yeah, when I had the accident for the kung fu, that was very monumental in sort of seeing the healing power that music has. Because when I was in the hospital, I listened to music nonstop, and I had never sort of experienced it as a listener.
Mm-hmm.
Being a musician from the age of 3, you know, you just do it as part of your existence and, you know, the way to get your parents to love you, hopefully. and that was the first time that I sort of took a step back and realized how much music can play a part in someone's life in terms of, you know, improving the mood. And the whole idea of going into biomedical engineering was that I am scared of blood. And sort of, you know, maybe I have a God complex that I want to help people by, literally saving their lives. But without being, you know, if you can't look at blood, it's kind of hard to do that. So I wanted to be in the medical field. But then I realized there's other ways of healing people that aren't necessarily medical.
Right. And especially musical healing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the music you're performing this week. Do you have any personal connections to the music of Rachmaninoff, or Paganini for that matter?
Well, I thought that as a marketing gimmick, I should change my last name to Rachmaninoff at one point to try to get some gigs, but I didn't. I love Rachmaninoff, and it's also very special that he played his last recital here in Knoxville.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's something that is really special for me. I think he's the greatest pianist that ever lived. If you listen to his recordings, they're phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they can't be matched. So I'll do my best.
It's going to be beautiful, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Are you hoping to evoke anything in particular to the audience? Is there a sort of musical message you want the audience members to walk away
with?
This
piece is so fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you look at Rachmaninoff's sort of compositions, there's a huge depth of, you know, he had a very difficult life. He suffered from depression. He stayed some time in, you know, mental hospital. He dedicated his second concerto to his psychotherapist. So there's definitely, you know, dark parts to his life that is reflected in his music. And in this piece, it's really, even though there's the theme, there's the sort of the Dies Irae theme, which is sort of the chant of death,
mm-hmm.
that's used, but it's done in such a way that it's just such fun. There's nothing too, you know, dark and depressing about this piece. It's just showing off in a way that, you know, you have to be comfortable with to a certain extent, which is hard. But it's a good time for everyone.
Yeah.
You're not going to go there, you know, pondering life's darkest meanings and thinking about the meaning of life after listening to this piece. You're going to go and like say, cool, that was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So earlier you mentioned that you always sort of had this desire to help people. You know, the great Nina Simone once said, an artist's duty, as far as I'm concerned, is to reflect the times. And she was, of course, referring to social activism.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a look at your website, and it looks like you're very much involved and interested in social activism yourself. What inspired that?
I think that's the point of living, is that, you know, you have to live a life of service to a certain extent. And as a musician, it's sort of hard to see that often, because the way that you market yourself and the way that the industry is run, you seem very separated from people in a certain way. And you're literally on a stage under a spotlight with people in the darkness listening to you. And
mm-hmm.
there's this innate hierarchy there. And for me, the whole point of music is the reason that these pieces have lasted through the time, you know, the test of time, is that the emotions have been the same, and we're all essentially, you know, the same person since Bach, since Monteverdi, since even, you know, before there are people's names that we know,
mm-hmm.
that we all want and feel the same things, and that's what we have in common. So, you know, I wanted to figure out a way to bridge the gap between the performer and this audience, and make sure that the audience feels like they're participants on the same level that I am,
mm-hmm.
and they can be a part of it, and, you know, in hopes of starting a conversation, and that you know, people can feel comfortable about sharing something more about their lives, or just making, you know, a small ripple effect across there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's I think it's really interesting for me to sort of break away from this awful sort of socioeconomic status we put on classical music, and to see how can this really, you know, affect people, you know, regardless of race, religion, you know, gender, any of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. I really love that. So after your performances this week in Knoxville, where are you headed?
I'm going home.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
I'm sticking around for a couple of days. I have some friends here. So I'll stay with them for the weekend, and then I go back to New York.
Oh, that's really great. That's
yeah.
really great. Well, before you go, I guess I should acknowledge this is Valentine's week.
Yeah.
And before we started recording, we actually talked about how we know people, my parents for sure, who would buy the candy the day after, you know, to...
you gave me chocolates for the first time I've ever received them.
Well.
So thank you so much.
Well, what I was going to ask you is, do you have any sort of Valentine's traditions or anything you do every year for Valentine's Day?
Probably eat a pint of ice cream and watch like a horror film.
So is that in your future this week?
No, we'll have a rehearsal, so that'll be fun.
Oh, okay.
We'll
okay.
make some good music instead.
Well, Tanya, thank you so much for coming in, and we look forward to your performances this week.
Thank you.
You can hear pianist Tanya Gabrielian and the music of Rachmaninoff, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Tchaikovsky on February 15th and 16th at the Tennessee Theater here in downtown Knoxville. More information on this performance and tickets can be found at knoxvillesymphony.com.